The following is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 44, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on January 21st, 1995, in Mumbai, India.
Sarvisa gopha samyama Astra gramascha bhavata Shikshito yad anugraha. By Dronacharya's mercy, that you learn the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Dhanurveda, or military science, was taught by Dronacharya with all its confidential secrets of throwing and controlling by Vedic hymns. Gross military science is dependent on material weapons, but finer than that is the art of throwing the arrow saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras, or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana that Maharaj Dasharath, father of Lord Sri Ram, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrow by only hearing the sound without seeing the object. So this is a finer military science than that of the gross military weapons used nowadays. Arjuna was taught all of this, and therefore Draupadi wished that Arjuna feel obliged to Acharya Drona for all these benefits. And in the absence of Dronacharya, his son was his representative. This was the opinion of the good lady Draupadi. It may be argued why Dronacharya, a rigid Brahmin, should be a teacher in military science. But the reply is that a Brahmin should become a teacher, regardless of what his department of knowledge is. A learned Brahmin should become a teacher, a priest, and a recipient of charity. A bona fide Brahmin is authorized to accept such professions. The most revealing chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find how great Vaishnavas, equally dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may have very much different perceptions of how to serve the Lord according to their particular God-given nature. Arjuna and Bhima, they were Kshatriyas. Their nature was to be very heroic and only feel fulfillment when real justice was served. A Kshatriya's nature is that he must put aside sentimental concerns for the sense of bringing justice to the world. We find sometimes great kings, they even have to severely punish their own beloved children and family members when they oppose the proper principles of the law. And it is their duty. Similarly, at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was torn between his natural sentiments as a soft-hearted devotee and his duty as a warrior, Kshatriya. And these two opposing feelings were having great combat in his mind. On one hand, he knew that this war had to be fought, and he had to fight it, because it was his duty and it was his nature. But at the same time, he had a very soft heart, as all devotees do. And that soft heart is naturally very forgiving, very accommodating. And ultimately, it was Krishna who had to reveal to him that actually the most compassionate and soft-hearted thing for him to do as a Vaishnava was to act according to his nature and kill the opposing forces. Because his sentiment was based on the bodily concept. If you actually love these people, send them back home, back to Godhead. Don't just allow them to continue their sinful activities, their manipulative, exploitive pastimes in this world. Krishna was on the battlefield. Whoever died in his presence went back home, back to Godhead. So from the point of view of the Vaishnava and from the point of view of a Kshatriya, both, you should give up mundane sentiment and live according to the real sentiment of what is best concern for the person's soul. So in this way, Arjuna fought. And in some places in the purports of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada explains that Arjuna was bewildered because of certain mundane sentiments. And in other places, Srila Prabhupada explains that Arjuna was actually perfectly situated. He just had a natural, compassionate, forgiving heart of a Vaishnava. And these two appear to contradict, but there's no contradiction. Because the great acharyas, in order to teach us various lessons about the reality of life and how to perfect our lives, they view things and explain things from different perspectives to give us different lessons, all of them very essential for our understanding. So here, Ashwatthama has so cruelly, brutally killed so many of the greatest soldiers of the Pandava army. Drishtadyumna was the commander-in-chief. The Kurus, they could not maintain any commander of their armies. First it was Bhishma, and he was defeated. Then it was Drona, and he was defeated. Then it was Karna, and he was defeated. And then another was put, and then ultimately he was defeated. But Drishtadyumna, from the beginning to the end of the whole battle, he maintained the position of the commander of all the forces. So you could imagine how dear he was to Arjuna. And he lived through it all. But Ashwatthama killed him without giving him a chance to defend himself. And then he killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. One of them was Arjuna's own. If a child is killed in a proper, fair match of Kshatriya combat, generally the father, being a Kshatriya, is very proud, sad but proud. My son, he went down fighting for justice. But in this sense, Ashwatthama deprived Arjuna and the Pandavas even this fulfillment. He killed them, although they were just teenage boys, when they were sleeping. It was such an atrocious act that even Duryodhana himself was disgusted by it. Ashwatthama brought the heads of these five children to Duryodhana, who was then in a suffering condition, terrible suffering condition, so much suffering he couldn't even see properly. He said, "I have brought the heads of the five Pandavas." Because Ashwatthama knew how much Duryodhana was against the Pandavas. He tried to kill them in so many ways. fair and unfair. So Duryodhana felt the heads of the five. But he was a very wise man, and he understood human physical nature. And he felt that the heads were very soft. That means they were just children. So he immediately understood that these are not the Pandavas. These are the little children of the Pandavas. You killed them? You killed these children? You should be ashamed of yourself. This is despicable. This is disgusting. Duryodhana himself, as cruel as he was utterly disgusted and saddened by the atrocity of Ashwatthama. So you can imagine Arjuna and Bhima. Bhima's own son was killed also. And Bhima is quite known for his ability to seek proper revenge against whoever opposes him or justice. So Bhima wanted that rascal dead. And Arjuna was furious. Not only was he furious because he destroyed his own children and his commander-in-chief, but he threw this Brahmastra weapon irresponsibly, which could have caused so much damage to so many other innocent people, just to save his own life. So Arjuna captured him like an animal, tied him up, brought him to Draupadi. And when Draupadi saw him, her heart became pretty soft. She told Arjuna, "You cannot kill him. In fact, you should set him free. You must let him go." She said to Arjuna that, "How could you tolerate seeing Ashwatthama bound by ropes?" "Because Draupadi is a woman. And in the Vedic society, women were women. And men were men. Kshatriyas were Kshatriyas. Brahmins were Brahmins. Vaishyas were Vaishyas. Shudras were Shudras. Vaishnavas were Vaishnavas. There's clear responsibility according to a person's nature. In these days, when varnashram is neglected, people are not content being what God has made them and utilizing their natural gifts in God's service. Everyone is in the mood of exploitation rather than service. Therefore, in this exploitative mood, people are trying to take artificial positions, to take superior positions over others. And therefore, women are trained to be like men to a large extent. The way they are educated, the way their sentiments, their tendencies for independence. No woman could be happy like this. It is simply impossible. We have never seen it. The more they try to take an unnatural position, the more they become bewildered and frustrated. Because men are not proper men either. Rather than offering every woman the respect of mother, they exploit them. Women, being frustrated with being exploited, want to take position of men. In this way, the whole society is in chaos. And in this way, nobody is living according to their natural God-given sentiments or their natures. But Draupadi was a woman, and she had a motherly nature, very mild, very forgiving. And she was thinking that Ashwatthama is the son of that great person who taught you everything, Arjuna. What would he think? Would Dronacharya want you to kill his own son, his only child, who he loved so dearly? Dronacharya was so attached to his son, and everyone knew that. That when he was fighting on the battle of Kurukshetra, he was fighting so ferociously against the Pandavas. In fact, he became so absorbed in the battle, he was breaking all military codes, fighting after the proper hours when the war should have ended and so forth, throwing various nuclear forms of weapons without discrimination. And ultimately, they knew that they had to somehow or other dampen his enthusiasm. And the only way they could do it is if somehow they could convince him that Ashwatthama, his son, was dead, because he loved Ashwatthama so much. He couldn't possibly fight with enthusiasm if he heard that news. And it worked. Krishna said, tell. Yudhisthira said, I cannot tell lie. He's not dead. I have never lied. I have never considered a lie in my whole life. But Krishna ordered him that for the sake of saving so many people, so much anxiety, you must do this for my pleasure. So somehow or other, it was conveyed to Drona by Yudhisthira that Ashwatthama was dead, and Drona just stopped fighting. So Draupadi understood. Although Drona was killed, still, he is your guru, and you must be grateful to him. And what would he think if we killed Ashwatthama at this time? Not only the nature of a woman, but a nature of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is forgiving. A Vaishnava is always very grateful. And a Vaishnava is always very considerate of whatever action, how it will affect the overall scenario. So here, Draupadi is pleading for the life of the very person that caused her the greatest pain in her own life. When a mother's child is murdered, we can imagine what pain. Perhaps the greatest pain Draupadi ever suffered. She was weeping, she was devastated, and yet she was pleading and begging that the person who caused her that pain be forgiven and released. Such greatness. And she was performing her activities in a way that was most dear and pleasing to Krishna. Gratitude is the nature of a noble soul. If someone ever once does anything to help you, to assist you, on a physical level, mental level, and especially the spiritual level, a devotee never forgets that. Cannot forget that. He's always indebted. Such a gracious heart. Even if that person changes and becomes something else, we have to do the needful as far as carrying on in our spiritual lives. But still, we are always thinking very graciously and gratefully that this person has done that for me. Sometimes we're new devotees and somebody preaches to us. That person may not even be a very strict devotee. That person may be just doing all crazy things, but somehow preached to us and helped us in the path of Krishna consciousness. And then we may become very strong and very serious, and we may be really endeavoring to surrender our lives, and we may see that person, well, what is he doing? What is she doing? But a real proper devotee will always think that that person is one of my gurus. That person has helped me on the path. Any favor that we receive, we should never forget it. Anything that anyone has done against us, we should forget it. This is the principle. Any offense that anyone has committed to you, forget it instantly. It's a contamination to your mind. If Krishna wants to deal with it, he will deal with it. But as far as you're concerned, forget it. Devotees should consider themselves so humble and fallen that no one can offend me anyway. I'm a criminal. How can you offend a criminal? All you can do is just bring some justice to the criminal. Through you, Krishna has punished me, so that is very good. So we forget offenses. But anyway, anyone on any level has helped us, has gone out of their way to assist us, we should never forget. To the moment we die, we should not forget that favor. And we should feel grateful. And we should remember that part. That is a devotee's nature. Arjuna, although he had to fight internally, his heart was a Vaishnava. Drona, Charja, was a part of all the atrocities against the Pandavas. Drona, Bhishma, they knew everything that Duryodhana was doing against the Pandavas, and they didn't do anything, really, to counteract it. They gave advice, they preached to Duryodhana, but ultimately they supported him in his most sinful, heinous activities. Took away the Pandavas' kingdom, took away everything. And yet Arjuna was ready to just forgive them. That it really doesn't matter that they supported Duryodhana. The fact is Drona taught us everything we know. And therefore we should honor him, we should worship him, we should respect him. It doesn't really matter that Bhishma is taking the position of the commander-in-chief to kill us all on the sinful rascal's army. He's our grandfather, and he showed kindness to us when we were young. We should let him go. We should just let them have the kingdom. So although he was fighting with the spirit of a great tiger on the battlefield on Krishna's instruction, utilizing his Kshatriya tendencies, still his heart was very soft and loving toward all those people who had ever done anything for him. So we find that sometimes in the execution of our duties in Krishna consciousness, we have to act against what we feel. Sometimes to uphold justice and truth, we have to speak out and act in such a way that is apparently inimical toward another. And we must, it is our duty. But in our hearts, we are always thinking something different. And that is a great sacrifice. We are thinking very compassionately, very forgiving, very loving. For ourselves, we can forgive anyone for any injustice. But for the service of Krishna and to uphold truth, we must act concisely and put aside our sentiments. That was Arjuna's condition in the battlefield. But for Draupadi, she was not a Kshatriya in the battlefield. There was no reason for her to have to fight against her own soft-hearted nature. She was a mother, and she had the heart of a mother. And that is honored and glorified here by the great Acharyas. On one level, it is to some extent criticized from the perspective that it really had nothing to do with proper justice. It was criticized, a sentiment. But from another point of view, it is being glorified because it was just the way Krishna wanted her to be. From the point of view of the heart, it's glorified. From the point of view of discriminatory intelligence, was why is she saying like this? But which is a higher level? Ultimately, bhakti is a thing of the heart. So therefore, Draupadi is revealing such an exalted, forgiving, motherly, loving nature, so very, very grateful. Unbelievably grateful. That whatever Ashwatthama is, that is not our concern. The question is, what would Drona want? And we are indebted to him. Even though Drona tried to destroy you all on the battlefield, and even though his son has killed all our children, still he helped us when we were in need at one time, and therefore we should honor him. So we should know that there is no conflict, there is no contradiction in various instructions that even appear so by the great acharyas. They are simply revealing higher truths from different perspectives at different times to teach us how to become properly cultured Vaishnav devotees of the Lord. Is there any questions?
Bhishmacharya is one of the Mahajans and the great devotee of Lord, and still he has taken the side of Duryodhana. Mm. How to understand that?
How can we understand? We can't understand by our own intelligence. We can only understand by hearing from the acharyas. Acharyopashanam. One who hears from the acharyas knows what is what. Nobody else knows what is what. We were speaking last night that however deep our intelligence and our philosophical abilities are, we cannot understand the truth. The truth is descending through the words of the great devotees of the Lord. And through their hearts, we can understand what is what. So Srila Prabhupada explains. He explained that in his books, the purports are of the real significance. The translations are important, but the purports are of utmost importance. Because practically speaking, all those great Sanskrit scholars who translate the Vedas give almost the same translations. Even the Mayavadis, their translations of the verses of Gita and Bhagavatam are practically the same. But the purports are altogether different. Tadvijnanartham sugurum eva abhigacchet. You cannot understand the Vedas without Guru. And it is not the translation, but the purport of the Guru that gives you the understanding of what the scripture means. So in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the inner mood of what Krishna intended through Bhishma. From the Karmakanda point of view, because understand that Mahabharata is written for all different classes of men, and there are different interpretations, and all of them are correct according to the reason that you're approaching the Lord. For those who are approaching Karmakanda, Artha Kama Dhamma Moksha, to uplift their material life, religiosity means piety. So Bhishma was taking so many favors from Duryodhana. Duryodhana was the king, and Bhishma was living in his kingdom. He was living in his palaces. He was taking food from that kingdom. So therefore, he was obliged. He couldn't betray someone who he was maintained by for so long. It is simply ungrateful. Therefore, even though he knew Duryodhana was wrong, he was obliged to stay with him. That is from the Karmakanda point of view. But Krishna says in Gita, Sarva dharaman puritya ja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha isyami masasya. Abandon all varieties of religiosity and just surrender to me. This verse just throws out the Karmakanda point of view. What Krishna wants you do, and you just abandon every other consideration of so-called religion. So from the point of view of being pious, Bhishma was right. But from the point of view of surrendering to Krishna, he was wrong. If you interpret it that way, that he was fighting because he was obliged. He's a Mahajan. He's meant to be acting on a level of a Mahatma, not a Karmakandi, a surrendered soul. So Guru Maharaj explains that actually he was the most surrendered soul. He took the side of Duryodhana as such an act of surrender that the world can never understand, because he knew Krishna's inner mood. He knew what Krishna wanted of him and what service he was meant to perform in Krishna's mission. Krishna came to this world to teach many lessons. And one lesson is that whoever you are, however learned, however powerful, however great, if you are a part of offenses against devotees, and if you are not on the side of God, you will be destroyed. Now, there was no one better in all of creation to teach this lesson through than Bhishma, because he was the most learned and he was the most powerful. Let us analyze Bhishma's life. When he was a child, his mother, Ganga, he was a celestial, he was one of the Vasus. He was a heavenly being, not of this earth. He was trained in the scriptures directly and personally by Brihaspati. Not in this world, but in the heavenly planets. How many people have their education in the heavenly planets, in the university of Brihaspati, being directly his student? Sometimes if someone's sent to America to study in Harvard, we think, oh, he must be very learned. He was sent all the way to Harvard, Cambridge, Massachusetts to study. Or someone is sent to Oxford University in London, and all the way to London just to get a big education. It's something really highly esteemed. People think he must have the best education. Probably does, from the material point of view. But Bhishma was sent to the heavenly abodes to study directly under Brihaspati, who's the most learned of all the demigods. So there was no one more learned than Bhishma. In the scriptures and in every science there is, he was master. He had the highest degrees, or as we say, he had the topmost educational qualifications. When foreigners come to India, especially in the old days, when I first came to India, everyone would ask me, what are your educational qualifications? I always wonder why they're asking me such a question. I mean, I never asked anybody this question. But everyone practically. What is your name? What country are you from? What are your educational qualifications? Anyways, Bhishma had the best educational qualification. And not only that, but he studied military science under Parasuram, who was the incarnation of Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself, who was the most powerful warrior. He destroyed the entire Kshatriya generation 21 times. And everything that Parasuram taught, everything Parasuram knew, Bhishma knew just as well. And to prove the fact, when Bhishma refused to marry Amba, she went right to Parasuram. It's a long story, but she said that he has ruined my other marriage. I was supposed to marry someone, but he touched me. Now no one will take me. Only he could marry me. So Parasuram felt such pity for this lady that she would have to be a widow if Bhishma did not marry her. So he ordered. He came down and said, I am your guru. Bhishma said, yes, I'm surrendered to you. Whatever you tell me, I will do. And Parasuram said, marry this woman. Bhishma looked at his guru and said, the stars will fall from the sky, the rivers will run dry, but I will never break my vow of brahmacharya. So Parasuram said, if that is the case, then you have to fight with me. Bhishma said, yes, we will fight. So they fought. Day after day after day after day, Parasuram could not defeat him, because everything Parasuram knew, Bhishma knew. That means Bhishma was as powerful as God himself. What type of warrior is this? And ultimately, no one could win. So finally, someone said to Bhishma, that listen, you can't just go on fighting for the rest of eternity, because neither of you are going to win. You're both totally equally matched. So it's proper etiquette that you're the disciple, that you should just say that, Gurudev, you have won. Even though he hasn't, still you should say like that. You should be the one who humbles himself. So when he humbled himself, Parasuram embraced him with such ecstatic love, because he was so pleased that he had learned the military science to such an extent. The teacher is very proud when a student learns everything. In fact, a good teacher is proud when the student outdoes him. A good father is proud and happy when the son does better. And a proper spiritual master or guru is very proud when the disciple makes better advancement than him. There's no envy amongst noble souls. Parasaram was very pleased. He gave Bhishma profuse blessings. And then he told the young lady, "What can I do? I tried my best." She had to remain widow. So, Bhishma was the greatest warrior. He was the greatest scholar. He was the greatest statesman. The most perfect politician. He was everything. He was the greatest renunciate. Even though he was practically ruling the whole kingdom, still he was a renunciate. Some people are proud of their ability to be renounced, to be celibate, to be self-controlled. Bhishma was the best. How is it possible? Most brahmacharis and sannyasis, they have to go to some ashram or to some forest to stay away from the objects of the senses so that they could maintain their vows. It's necessary. There's no other way. But Bhishma was living right in the heart of the kingdom. He was acting as a king even for some time when there was no proper king. He was living in all the beautiful palaces. Most Kshatriyas were allowed so many wives. He was in that whole environment, but he maintained perfect celibacy. Who could do that? He was the greatest renunciate. He was the greatest everything. Not only that, but he had a benediction from his father, Maharaj Santanu, that nobody could kill him, ever. And that he could only die when he personally, by his own free will, decided to die. So on top of all of his other skills, he had this benediction from a great sage. So he had everything. And Krishna set him up to be like that. But Krishna wanted to show that even if you have all that, if you're not pleasing Krishna, if you're not on Krishna's side, if you're any way a part of offending devotees, you will be destroyed. So Bhishma knew, he was in contact with the Paramatma, that Krishna wants to make a grand lesson to the world and use me. Therefore, I must stay on the side of Duryodhana so that I will be destroyed. He knew he would be destroyed taking the side of Duryodhana. There was no question in his mind. There wasn't the slightest possibility, and he knew it, that they could be victorious. He would have to be defeated. And he could have easily said, "I'm going to fight with the Pandavas because they're right. I believe in them." But he knew that Krishna wants to show the world through me that even the greatest person will misunderstand me, will criticize me. I don't mind. If this is what it takes to help the mission of my Lord. Therefore, yes, he is a great Mahajan, perfectly situated always in surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. Bhishma knew he would be dishonored. Just like yourself, you are a very cultured, educated person from India with a very nice religious background, but you're asking this question. Practically everyone asks this question. That means they have shadows of doubt on Bhishma. And Bhishma was intelligent enough to know that the whole world, even the most cultured people, would doubt his character for taking the side. But he didn't mind. Let the world doubt me. Dishonor is worse than death for a Kshatriya, but he was willing to accept dishonor for all time to come if this is what was required to best serve his Lord Sri Krishna. Such surrender is something wonderful that we can only aspire to follow. Yes?
Maharaj, what is the karma of these five children that they had to die such a death?
There are all Puranic stories for all these. This is not just a matter of karma. They were the five Pandavas' children. Does anyone know specifically the story? There's a story for everything. But we can understand that in order to teach the world the supremely benevolent motherly qualities of Draupadi, and to teach the world the wonderful variegatedness amongst pure devotees of the Lord, how they could completely, totally, diametrically disagree on points, but still remain equally dear to the Lord, Krishna arranged this beautiful pastime. And therefore, anyone who assists the Lord in his beautiful pastimes, they are certainly not under the laws of karma. They are under Krishna's direct spiritual internal potency. You may ask, what was the karma of Jai and Vijay to become demons in three births? It wasn't a matter of karma. The Lord wanted them to assist in his pastimes in so many wonderful ways. Every day we're singing the beautiful prayers of Lord Narasimhadev. For those of you who went to South India, you remember what a wonderful, ecstatically beautiful experience it was going to that Narasimha temple at Srirangam. How ecstatic, enlivened everyone was chanting the holy names of Lord Narasimhadev, seeing his beautiful form. But the fact is, if it wasn't for Hiranyakashipu being such a demon, there would be no Narasimhadev coming to this earth. So although Hiranyakashipu is the very epitome of what we should never be, still we're very grateful to him because he served such a wonderful purpose in this pastime that the Lord appeared in such a wonderful form. And Kamsa was also a terrible demon. He was atrocious. He was a rakshasa. But still, it was Kamsa that inspired the demigods to pray for Krishna to come to the earth and reveal his wonderful pastimes. So although these personalities may be incomprehensible to us, why they behave like this, why they're being treated like this, why they're being killed like this, we should know that they are all under the internal potency of the Lord because they are directly and personally assisting the Lord's pastimes. So is Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. Although we may say all kinds of bad things about them, nevertheless, if it wasn't for Duryodhana, there would be no Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Bhagavad Gita is eternal, but that's the way the Lord, his pastime of how he desired to reveal it to the world. So we should know that these personalities are not within the realm of karma. Sometimes there are examples to be used from different perspectives to explain the nature of karma. But on a higher level, they are all just in various ways under the divine potency of the Lord, assisting the Lord in revealing his wonderful pastimes to the world. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.